Hello, everybody. Welcome back to Bald Move Pulp in its second week of the Badass Film Festival Marathon. Today, we're talking about Cobra, 1986 movie directed by George P. Cosmatos, starring and written by Sylvester Stallone, which is a whole story into itself. I had never seen this particular piece of the Badass catalog. Sylvester shares the screen with the frequent Badass collaborator Bridget Nielsen, which you might recognize from Red Sonja, Rocky IV, etc. Rini Santoni, who played Poppy on the television sitcom Seinfeld, and Chico Gonzalez and Dirty Harry. Brian Thompson as the Night Slasher, who has played just a ton of characters under heavy prosthetics in the Star Trek franchise, including several Klingons and Jem'Hadar warriors. He's the alien bounty hunter in X-Files. Brock in Dragonheart, and then Lee Garlington as Nancy Stalk, who we actually just saw her recently in Sneakers. Do you remember that Czechoslovakian mathematics scientist that Robert Redford had to schmooze into her office at one point? That's your Lee Garlington.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah, like I said, I've never seen this film. I remember my cousin having this poster, the Cobra poster, on the door of his bedroom at one point in my childhood. What do you think of old Cobra here?
Wow. I wasn't expecting what I got from this movie. I don't know. After watching it, it's definitely one of those so bad it's good movies. I wish,
for sure.
Because years ago when we were living together, we were doing marathons of badass action movies from like the 80s and 90s. I wish this had been one of them instead of like the remake of RoboCop or something, because that's a bad movie. This is a very good bad movie that is basically a parody of itself and every action movie you've ever seen. It's an unintentional parody of like Dirty Harry and Death Wish and all these like 70s to 80s badasses who were just taking the law into their own hands, right? The cop who bends and breaks the law to get justice. And it's shit. It's absolutely terrible, but it is a hell of a lot of fun to watch.
It reminds me, I'm so glad we actually lucked out with this film.
Yeah.
Because I thought it might just be a stinker. And also, we both kind of really wrestled over, God, for Arnold, should we do Commando or Predator?
Mm-hmm.
Like, Commando is the epitome of a certain type of 80s action film. All brawn, no brain, like ludicrous in both the contemporary, but also like 30 years just gets more and more absurd, but still holds up because of a central kind of charismatic performance and an actor who might not know that this material is as ridiculous as it is. Although I think Arnold knows a little bit more than Sly, since Sly wrote this shit.
Right.
But it has that same kind of just manic, crazy 80s action energy. And halfway through this film, I was thinking, man, would this be the good bones of a really good 80s like action movie parody? Which I don't know that we've gotten a great 80s action movie parody. Like, you know, there was some contemporary ones like Hot Shots Part 2.
Yeah, yeah.
But like something that like goes back and sees what's ridiculous about the thing. Like, you know, like this crazy over the top look at the way crime works in this movie, you know, that you just got essentially evil people and our society is breeding them.
Yeah.
And what you need, you got this disease and what's the cure? It's fucking Marion Cobretti here.
Jesus. It's a dude with a cobra printed on his grip.
but then as I kept on watching, I'm like, no, this movie is just it. Like, if you want to see a parody of 80s action films, watch Cobra, because it delivers the fucking goods.
And the best part about it is it doesn't know that it's it. It doesn't know that it's the parody of itself, the parody of every action movie you saw in the 80s. It's kind of the culmination of an era. Even though it's 1986, this came out, I think, before Predator, before some of the better action movies.
Right.
It also somehow sums up the entirety of that era of action movies.
Oh, yeah. And you're right about the fact that it actually is funnier, that they don't. It's like,
yeah,
It's funny in Doctor Strangelove that Slim Pickens didn't know that he's in a comedy and he's playing right. every scene like deadly serious. And like, I think that that holds true for Cobra. Mm-hmm. That like everybody here thought this was going to be like, did you see the backstory and the lore of this, of the production of this thing?
Some of it. What part of it are you talking about?
So Sly Stallone got hired to star in Beverly Hills Cop. He was supposed to be the Beverly Hills Cop, but he got the script. You know, he's a bit of a script writer himself, you know, got an Oscar for a few good turns and Rocky and and he goes to work on it and he just takes out all of the comedy and just keeps on pumping up the action. He submits the script to the studio and they're like, well, this is unfilmable. This thing's going to cost like,
Yeah,
it's so violent and it's so over the top and there's so many stunts. Like this is we got a mid-budget comedy and you got a big budget blockbuster you're trying to make here. Get the fuck out of here. You know, the rest is history when it comes to Beverly Hills Cop. But Stallone kept on like, you know, there's something here. And he essentially borrowed like a crime novel for like some kind of, I don't know, so people take it seriously. He found a weak director that would let him push around and essentially direct the film itself.
Oh God, it's so ridiculous.
And he made his over the top Beverly Hills Cop. Like that's, and you can see like once you know that he, this is supposed to be Axel Foley, like the comedy DNA kind of jumps out and you can see where there were still kind of like, you know, like Stallone engages in prop comedy in a roadside diner at one point. And it's just the greatest. Yeah, this is what he thought the 80s needed.
Should we talk about the story before we get into like the heavy production stuff? Because there's so much that like the details of what you're talking about are delicious. But yeah, let's get into it.
You first.
Oh, the story of this is basically there is a cult of serial killers out there and it seems to be widespread. Like they show a shot of people banging together axes. Twice in this movie they show it and it cracks me up every time because it's so stupid. But they're like from all walks of life, right? They're building some new world order thing where murdering the weak is like their strength and they're going around LA doing that, and Cobretti is called in because the normal cops can't handle him, and so he's got to go lay down the law, and laying down the law means becoming Judge Dredd and murdering a bunch of people.
And you know, like a lot of the action movies at the time, like they make it clear that these people are all guilty and they deserve it.
They're all like,
these are unrepentant murderers, axe murderers at that. They're literal crazed axe murderers meeting in sewers and talking about how they're the shape of things to come.
And I guess the tension of the movie, if there is in fact any of that, comes from a model who is a witness to some of these, to at least one of these murders, and knows who the Night Slasher is and can identify him. They're targeting her for death to, you know, protect themselves. And Cobra has to defend her and he takes her to the countryside and just all hell breaks loose.
Yeah, that's really funny, too, because he's not very good at, you know, the movie requires that they got this set up, right? You know, she's terrified that he's not going to be able to protect her. This one man against this highly armed, sophisticated axe murderer psychopath gang. But the movie also requires, because of its plot, that he be kind of like just on the verge of losing her. You know, like there's like three different attacks they mount, one at a hospital, one at the countryside, one in a hotel. And like, you know, after the third one, she asked what I think a reasonable person would ask, like, you know, how can you ensure that I'm going to keep you safe? And he's like, just don't worry about it. And she's like, well, you know, they've actually got me like two or three times. And he's like, we just have to have faith. And the camera pans to Bridget Nielsen and she gives, like, if I was directing a parody of this scene, like in a MacGruber type parody, I would direct her to act exactly like she does. Like, I just can't believe I'm hearing what I'm hearing. And also this guy is like not very charming and they play him like it's played on the scene as if he's irresistible to women. Like Bridget has got this or Ingrid, her character, has just got this compulsion to like ask him about his history and his self. And like when she gets bored, his partner's right there to like prompt her with like leads, like ask him about his name. It's a girl's name. Isn't that funny?
Right. But it's not. So there's only really like two women in this entire movie, right? There's who are, you know, part of the movie other than like, oh, there are people in the background, whatever. It's Ingrid and it's the leader of this death cult, I guess. I don't know if she's a leader.
Officer Stalk.
Yeah, the
which I thought was a good, nice touch naming her Stalk because God. She's stalking. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I didn't even realize that. That's stupid. And yeah, so it's really just like this woman is super fascinated. But I was watching this movie and the first scene you see her in, well, aside from the montage, which we can talk about, it really sucks.
Mm-hmm.
There's this this photographer guy who's just basically trying to fuck her and is like trying to talk her in to sleeping with him. And I got to thinking when Cobra came around and, you know, his partner's like, oh, she's hot. Huh? Oh, she's real attractive. Like, give me a piece of that.
Mm-hmm.
She might be attracted to him because he's the only guy who has not immediately tried to get into her pants the second they met her.
Mm-hmm.
Because the rest of the guys in this movie are just drooling. Their mouths are hanging open. It's
Jim Carrey wearing the mask, seeing Cameron Diaz at the club for the first time.
Exactly.
Just tongue rolling out, turning into a wolf. Yeah. And to the extent that, like, I love when, like, Stallone finally wears her down with his masculinity or whatever. And she's like, quit fooling with your guns and come over here and get in bed with me. And he kind of like puts his guns down and kind of rolls his eyes and like, ugh, I guess. Like, he's just maximum resistant to it. Like, I don't know. It's like this. She is just inexplicably fascinated by him. But maybe you're right. Mm. He's the only guy who makes lame prop comedy based advances towards her rather than just crude. Come on, baby. Why don't you just break me off a piece kind of advances? So
he basically does the equivalent of telling her she'd look better if she smiled more. Mm-hmm. by telling her like, oh, that's too much ketchup for your fries. I don't know, man.
Yeah, weird neg.
Yeah,
like they make it a point of her just filling her fries with ketchup. Mm-hmm. And then him like, oh, you need a snorkel for those fries because you're drowning them. And just,
yeah, he's a weird guy.
This is right after he grabbed a comically large foam hamburger off the display at this dive bar. And like I said, just started doing some Carrot Top style prop comedy involving like, hey, it's a big birth, big enough for a family. It's an extra large combo. I don't know, man. It's really funny. Also, I love how you can tell that the cop, the evil female cop, is in fact an evil female cop because she's wearing zero makeup and has bad hair.
It's true.
That's true. That's it. She's coded. Mm-hmm. She's the only other woman in this film, and she's just doesn't give a shit about her appearance. So she can't be trusted. She's evil.
Yeah. Whereas Cobra gives maybe too much shit about his appearance. Like the over the top macho demeanor of Cobra is just too much, man. It's too much. And it's not like the movie works its way into that. It's too much immediately. Like the opening montage of these two people like going to the grocery store, one of them the killer, one of them Cobra. He's riding his motorcycle in a blood red sunset. He's got the shades on.
Awesome. It actually looks incredible. This is 80s as fuck and it looks incredible. Like it's all you can't tell where the red sky from the dawn it begins and the red of the motorcycle ends. It's really fucking slick.
I will say, given that he's riding his motorcycle in that sunset, in that opening shot, I'm not actually sure how he shows up at the crime scene in a car, but he does. He shows up in this matte black hot rod that, you know, he's polishing with the inside of his coat the entire movie because this is
the motorcycles are from the axe murderers. I thought the same thing, too, but they established later that this is also a motorcycle gang because they just have scads and scads and scads of motorcycles.
Okay. Yeah. All right. I thought Cobra was headed there.
I think this is the motorcycle is the dude that's about to do the supermarket heist.
Oh, okay.
Where he kills one guy with a shotgun, but mostly just row after row of produce. He has got it in for heads of lettuce.
2 liters galore.
Watermelon, 2 liters especially. Mm-hmm. A large prop Pepsi can. He's going to, there's so much collateral damage in the inanimate object department in this.
But Cobra rolls up and he's got this mad black hot rod from like the 40s or something. And then they do a close up on his license plate as he drives into frame, and it's AWSOM space 50. And I'm like, mm-hmm. What the fuck does that mean? And then it took me like 2 seconds to realize, oh my God, this is a cop vanity plate. Awesome 50, awesome cop. The way that they like ramp up that character, it's just immediate, right? It's like Fast and Furious from the mm-hmm. very beginning. The next scene, I think, like after he goes in and he kills this guy, which is a bunch of macho shit that he's doing anyway, and he's spouting one liners and, you know, throwing knives and shooting guys. And then he goes back to his house and he's like cutting pizza with a pair of scissors.
A scissors? What the fuck? He cuts pizza in half, but not the way you think.
Right.
Like he holds up the triangle slice and cuts it in the middle, like the pointy tip off.
Right. So one piece has crust, one piece doesn't.
Puts the crust piece away and just mm-hmm. eats the tip.
Yeah, I can't believe this character is so ridiculous. Like, I forgot to mention when he steps out of his car at that first scene. The camera does, you know, one of those things where it like follows from the boots and goes all the way up him, and it shows like his fucking boots and his leather jacket, his sunglasses that are completely mirrored, mm-hmm. and then he's chewing a match the whole time.
Not a toothpick, a match.
Right, because that's so much harder than a toothpick. Oh my god.
Yeah. And will he use that match to somehow dispatch a bad guy at some point in the running time of this film?
100%.
Is Sylvester's name Cobra? Because Yeah, he's going to do that.
And that was just like the very first scene where he's introduced, and they show his gun in that scene, and his gun has a fucking Cobra printed on the grip, mm-hmm. on his white grip. This movie is trying way too fucking hard to make him seem like a badass, and that's where the MacGruber stuff comes in.
I want to tell you a couple things about this film, and tell me if it surprises you. Number one, Stallone pitched to the executive was that the Marion Cobretti, first of all, the Marion explained, because that's John Wayne's first name.
Okay.
So like, you know, another badass with a girl name, or we're going to go there. But he pitched it as Bruce Springsteen with a gun.
Well, that just sounds stupid. I would laugh him out of the studio right there.
But doesn't that fit, like when you see the uh-huh. slow kind of pan from the boots up to the jacket to
if he had taken the jacket off, rolled up his sleeves, it would have been Bruce Springsteen for sure.
Secondly, that is still Sylvester Stallone's actual car, his primary vehicle at the time that he loved. It's a 1950s custom Mercury Classic. It's an awesome 50, of course. And I kind of want to believe that that's his actual driver's license too. And he just drove it from, and throughout the whole movie, he's like admiring it and polishing it. And the knowledge that this is actually his personal ride is so great for that. And I guess the studio had to build like 3-4 stunt cars, because they thrash this car. There's all kinds of police chases. There's all kinds of like bullet holes that it gets. But like, this is just a huge fucking, I think I like Sylvester Stallone, but it's pretty well attested that throughout the 80s and early 90s, he had a massive ego problem, probably from, probably he had that. There's some inferiority complex because of his stature in Hollywood versus his real life stature. Plus, like, you know, his background. And then he like has these hits after hit after hit. And now he thinks he can do no wrong. Like, he seemed like he's a pretty rude asshole guy for most of his time. But like, also just his egomania. Mm-hmm. The fact that he cast himself as Bruce Springsteen with a gun. The fact that he cast himself as just like magnetically irresistible to women. The fact that he puts his own personal car as the, like, he is like, you know, Sylvester Stallone is Cobra in this film. And as far as I can tell, his actual contemporary views on crime were like this, like, you know, hey, this country's got a runaway view of crime. The liberal nanny pinko commie state is churning them out and coddling them, and we got judges letting people, and what we really need is a zombie squad of like extracurricular, extra legal cop judicial action, like Judge Dredd kind of thing.
Yeah.
And sure. Yeah, like you start seeing like a lot of this come out. I don't know if he still feels this way, but a lot of this comes out in like the choices he makes, like Judge Dredd, Demolition Men, they all kind of revolve around these themes of these like a particular breed of violent psychopathic criminal that has no redeeming values. They're just born bad. They're shaped by the system. They're getting churned out of super predators. And it's like, nah, man, it's lead. It was lead in the environment. It's lead everywhere. Lead in the paint, lead in the atmosphere, lead in the water. It turned everybody into violent psychopaths. Also more controversial, probably legal, safe abortion kept, you know, kept a lot of children that would be otherwise unfortunate, unloved, and unwanted off the streets. That's why the crime rate was spiking. It wasn't just like a uniquely hyper-violent breed of criminal that we were making. It's just, yeah, we put lead in the environment, and it's essentially Dr. Jekyll juice, and we created a bunch of Mr. Hydes out there, and it's better now. Hmm. Although, you know, if you pay attention to the headlines with the lead in the pipes and stuff, I do worry in another 10 or 15 years, like, Jesus Christ, are we doing this all over again? But yeah, oh, no, yeah. It's this throwback and how like thoroughly they've got, like, he's got one chief of police that's like the good guy, you know, he's got the government issued face. He's got the strong jaw. He's got strong actions, criminal. And then you've got the other guy. God, what his name's Monty.
Right.
And he's wearing glasses. He's kind of seen as a nerd, and he's constantly going up to Cobretti and be like, you think you're so cool. You're not cool at all. You're actually, you know, a violent macho idiot.
And he's right.
Like, that's the guy thing. Like, Stallone's response is always, oh, you think I'm a violent nut job? Punch in the face or choke you
or murder somebody. Just, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, man. It's just, oh, God, it's just hilarious. Like, oh, you think I'm a violent nut job? Well, we'll see about that. Kapow.
Think I'm an egomaniac? I'll take this. Did you hear some of the production stuff on this, man? We need to get deep in the weeds on this because I read a lot of shit about this. So not only, you know, Sylvester Stallone was supposed to be in Beverly Hills Cop, like you said, and he rewrote a bunch of that to make it violent and over the top. The studio turned it down. Apparently his character's name in that movie was Axel Cobretti. And so he takes that character, basically one-to-one ripoff, and throws it in this movie, changes his name to Marion. And then He approaches Paula Gosling, who was the writer of some crime novel that he basically wanted to use as a
fair game. Yep.
Yeah. Foundation for this thing, and says, hey, I want you to I'm going to make this movie and I want you to re-release this book and give me co-writer credit on your fucking novel that was written 20 years ago, whatever it was.
Right.
I want to be the co-author on this thing.
Yeah.
Are you fucking kidding me?
I want my face on
me?
The cover, and I want to be listed as a co-author because I.
And then he goes and he hires a director who I only know as the guy who stars Push Around and gets his, he's like the name of the director, but the real director always tends to be like Kurt Russell in Tombstone or Sylvester Stallone in this. And apparently this guy never does any work, but he gets paid.
Yeah, he's supposedly a very good producer. Like, he's really good at like lining up the resources and getting the sets and everything. But like, yeah, like this has come up twice in our independent research decades apart that he did Tombstone, but secretly it was Kurt Russell doing everything. And that he did now Cobra and it's secretly Sylvester Stallone. It does seem like maybe this guy's got a reputation for being like, hey, if you want to be an actor slash director, get old Cosmatos interested in your stuff. And then, yeah.
It's amazing to me though, that like history, that background for this movie and the hubris.
Oh my God. What do you, cause we also, you know, Panos Cosmatos is his son. How much of Mandy was just Nick Cage taking over that movie and doing whatever the hell he wanted? Like, is he following his father's footsteps?
Maybe. I haven't heard any reports of that, so I'm going to give him the benefit of the doubt and say that the son has eclipsed the father here. But who knows?
Here's what's new in premium content for our club members. Executive producers get to exercise their voting fingers again this week with another prestige movie poll. This week's nominees are Mystic River, The Last Samurai, and Secondhand Lions. Take your pick and seal our fate.
This Monday on the Premium feed, we open up the books and deliver a State of the Empire podcast, talking about the current condition of Bald Move and our plans for this year.
This Friday, it's Lunch 420, which given last weekend seems like a tragic missed opportunity. Ah well, lunch will be served piping hot at 1 p.m. Eastern. Come join live or warm up some leftovers when lunch is released in podcast form later that day.
If you want more Bald Move in your life, head over to support.baldmove.com to find out how you can get tons of bonus audio and video content, plus ad-free feeds. Commission podcasts are an awesome feature here at Bald Move that allows you, the individual listener, to decide what we talk about for a single podcast.
The community loves it because it often leads to fun fan favorite films and TV shows that we've overlooked getting the coverage they deserve.
And we love it because we're constantly exposed to great stuff that's not even on our radar.
The way it works is simple. You go to support.baldmove.com and you click on commissions. Then you pay the flat rate for the commission and tell us what two-ish hours of content you'd like us to make podcasts on.
Then we'll contact you for details, advanced feedback, and any dedications you'd like to make.
Then we watch the thing, discuss the thing, turn it into a podcast, and pump it right into your ears.
We get consistently great feedback on how much our commissioners love their podcast, and they make great gifts for the dedicated Bald Move fan in your life.
And who knows, that dedicated fan could even be you. Treat yourself. Check out support.baldmove.com for more info.
You talked a little bit about like the view of crime that this movie has, and I think we should come back to that because there's a lot of stuff in this movie that clearly has an agenda, and that's it. There's just so many things that are like, it starts right off the bat too, right? When he goes in and there's this guy with a shotgun who's blasting 2 liters left and right on the shelves, you know, killing a couple people in the process. And Cobra goes in there and he murders this guy. And then he comes out and the news crews are all like, did you use unnecessary deadly force? And, you know, he has some smart comeback for that. Aleck comeback. And then over the course of the movie, like, they involve the Night Slasher and this cult, and then they keep killing, right? And the cops just can't stop serial killers. They have no means of stopping killers. So they got to call in Cobra, who's the only guy who can help them. And, you know, the entire time he's telling them, like, look, as long as we got to play by these rules and the bad guys don't, we're going to lose. That kind of shit. Uh-huh. It's like, no, because the bad guys are just like a dude and you have the entire force of the U.S. government behind you. I think you can handle it. I think you got the tools. You don't need the heavy artillery. And there are so many other lines in this movie too, where like, I forget who he's talking to, but he's talking to somebody and he says like, oh, we to talk to the judge, we put him away. They let him out. Like, he's talking about violent criminals, right? The guys who go in and, oh, of course, the judges just let him out. That's what happens.
Right. For no. In a court and then of law. Like at the end, when the night stalker guy is like taunting him, it's like, oh, this was Rorschach stuff. Like he goes from like, want your eyes, pig. I want them. I want to wear your skin. Then Cobra gets to bed, the upper hand on him. And he said, like, you know, oh, you can't murder. It's against the law. You have to take this me in. So I have rights, don't stupid. I? You know, they'll find me insane. I'm like, does this movie think that if an axe murderer is decreed insane, that they're just free to go?
Yes.
Like, well, you can't be held responsible. No.
Yes, it does.
You're locked up in a different type of prison. And if you ever get cured of your insanity, then you go back to regular prison to serve out the rest of your time. Like the judges aren't like, oh, well, yeah, you clearly chainsawed this person in half. Only a crazy person would do that. Let's let him back on the streets. And this, like, it starts like immediately. The opening credits of this film is just grim crime statistics.
Oh, right.
It's Sylvester. Every 22 seconds, someone's awesome custom 50s Mercury is stolen off the streets.
Every 35 seconds, six dogs are murdered.
Every minute and a half, someone rubs cocoa butter on my muscles. And it's like, just like this, all these crime stats of like how many burglaries, how many thefts, how many murders, how many rapes. And it's like you're slowly staring down a barrel of a gun. Like, I mean, like I said, I've seen Dirty Harry. I've seen Death Wish. I don't know that I've seen something as like this much amped up where it's just it's the problem is we got criminals and we got soft judges and soft politicians and blah, 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 blah. And also, man. And I know that we saw, like, I guess that this was a much more violent film and it was cut down because, yeah, I want to talk about a couple of reasons. But part of the reason it was cut down is because it was like too violent.
Yeah.
But I got to say, in the first 15 minutes of the movie, I feel like it suffers because the way they established that this first cult axe murder leader that we see that goes into like they show him ride up on a motorcycle and he parks in a handicap spot.
Right.
And he goes on a rampage, but he's just shooting heads of lettuce and like watermelons. And like he finally, I guess, like to show that he's the epitome of evil, he like picks this one guy out of the crowd's like, you can go now. And as he almost gets to the door, he cuts him down with a shotgun. And that's what you're talking about. The media is really giving it to Cobretti, like, oh, did you use excessive force? And he like goes over to a gurney and he like raises the sheet and shows the guy who got shot by the shotgun. Why don't you ask his family about whether I used excessive force? And I'm like, it's really a trip to watch this in 2021 because I'm thinking of like the recent high profile cop murders. And it's like, dude. Cobretti goes over and it's like pulls over a sheet and it's just a convenience store guy with a fake $20 bill standing there alive. Why don't you ask this guy and his family? Or it's a person that bought a loose cigarette on the street. Why don't you ask this guy? Has this pack of cigarettes gone through rigorous safety standards, or has he paid all of his proper taxes before?
Like, or he just picks a random house in the street, walks into their bedroom and lifts their covers off and says, why don't you ask them if they wanted to be busted in while they were sleeping, you know?
Yeah,
it's like
yeah.
that shit.
The actual axe murder is 15 miles across town and they actually already have him in custody and he's going into this house and shooting him up.
The tone of this movie is unconscionable now. It's ridiculous.
I know. And again, there was a very real, I mean, this was a very real cultural reaction to a crime wave that was caused by, you know, among other things, leaded gasoline and
it's part
like
of the reason
really
we
funny
are
to
where
live.
We are with where we are with that. I mean,
yeah. And like, it's really just funny. Like now that we're kind of like universally, like if you look across the board, like violent crime is at some of the lowest points we've ever seen in since we started keeping track of statistics, you know? And yet we still have the same mentality, this thin blue line, this militarized police, you got to have these guys, you know, zombie squads out here doing shit, coloring outside the lines, because if we just left it up to the lawyers and judges, we'd be anarchy. It's just, I guess that would be the way to parody this, is you just reshoot it, put Cobretti, and he is just literally like, why don't you ask this guy that almost accepted a counterfeit dollar, you know, a counterfeit 20. Why don't you ask his parents of what they feel about the situation? They're like, you know, because that's the only way you can make it, because inside the universe of Cobra agrees with Cobretti. Like, obviously he is correct and he's right and all that stuff. But yeah, it's a trip to watch how. And it's not just that they've got crooked cops working on the force and providing intelligence to the bad guys. Like, it's just a bad scene. It's one step removed from Judge Dredd.
Oh, yeah.
While we're talking about kind of random stuff, what is your impression of Cobretti's apartment?
I don't understand it.
Yeah. It's like a loft studio kind of thing in you know, I don't know, an okay neighborhood in L.A. It's all done in like white. He goes home.
Direct you're link to the police headquarters records.
He's got a whole Batman, a Batcave set up where he's got like fingerprint things and all this stuff. Like he's essentially kind of Batman in there. He's cutting his pizza in half with scissors. He's hiding a gun cleaning kit in a carton of eggs that he keeps in the fridge.
I thought, he's a cop who's on like a really low salary, but it doesn't, that idea doesn't match up with his apartment, which is actually pretty nice.
Yeah, it's messy, but kind of upscale.
Why doesn't he have like a nice leather case for his gun cleaning kit? Why doesn't he, or a box?
They're not illegal. Like, no. It's like he's hiding it. Like, this is a custom off market, gray market gun cleaning kit.
There's some like, obsession the Cobra has with nutrition, and that Sylvester Stallone probably has with nutrition and his job and violence and the like macho stature that he likes to portray. There's some weird mix there that's going on in this movie, and I don't understand it.
Yeah, and I was trying, like, when he brought out the pizza and the egg carton, I thought he was going to like take a bite of pizza and crack a raw egg and put it into his mouth and just like go between pizza and just like fucking. And when the gun cleaning kit was inside and he starts cleaning, I like lost my fucking mind. I was like, where, right. Who, like, what is this? Is a weird, interesting, specific detail, but who, where did it come from? Like, it's dumb. It'd be like a dentist keeping a toothbrush in the icebox or something. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, like I get if you're a little old lady and you keep your checks or your money in like a ice cream sandwich box in the refrigerator because you're afraid someone will steal it. That's the last place they'll look. But like, you know, his guns are just sitting on the counter, but the gun cleaning kit is hidden in an, I don't know. It's wild.
It is, man. Yeah, I don't know what his nutrition thing is, but his partner is always like going for the cake and the gummy bears, right? And the bad foods. And he's always trying to push him toward the good foods, right? And, you know, he gives Ingrid shit about her, how much ketchup she's putting on her fries, even though she's not unhealthy looking. As a matter of fact, she could probably use a couple extra calories. She's a little thin, sure. Like 80s
she's
models
model,
were.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Lots of Coke.
Oh, that's the other thing. When they bring her in and interrogate her, they're like, do you know anyone who does drugs? Have you ever been around drugs? And she's like, no. Are you fucking kidding me? You're a model in the 80s and you've never seen drugs.
And she's like, also, they throw that in and like Cobretti and his partner look at each other like, oh, we actually have this is a kind of non-coke sniffing model you can take home to mom.
Oh,
like,
God. Yeah,
they literally, you can see them mentally shifting her out of like the prostitute whore category into the good girl category. And it's really gross. Like, you can just see them. You can just see them do it. I've never gotten mixed up with anything like
drugs.
That.
What are those? Never heard of them.
Yeah, I mean, like sometimes I take an aspirin if my head hurts, but you know, I will say this, watching these 80s films, I appreciate how unchoreographed some of the stuff is. In fact, there's a really funny behind the scenes story where like Stallone was supposed to have this fight with the stalker lady, you know. The evil cop lady, and she kept on saying, hey, we need to rehearse this because I don't know what I'm doing. You know, I'm an actor. I'm a woman who plays, you know, lots of things, but not people who trade punches with Arnold or Sylvester Stallone. Mm-hmm. He kept on being like, oh, you'd be fine. Just kind of do what feels. And I guess the first three takes were her just like jumping on his back spider monkey style and him just kind of shrugging and knocking her off. And he's like, OK, maybe we ought to practice. But I think this kind of like with most stuntmen, I really think like Sly and Arnold would just show up to the set and like, all right, you kind of punch me and then I'll punch you and we'll just have a good time with it. Because like it feels very much like a brawl.
Yeah.
Like you don't have like this, you know, we just talked about Jason Bourne and how like it's got like three different blends of martial arts from different continents and it's all, but this is just beefy dudes punching each other and mm-hmm. the camera staying with them and like, oh man, wouldn't it suck to get punched by a dude that looks like this? That's it. That's it. There's no artistry. There's no, but it does feel much more real. And
yeah,
but there's another time where like, you know, you see in the Fast and Furious all the time, like they have these money shots where, Vin Diesel will be in slow motion and he's like doing a complicated 720 spin of his car and he's going to open up the passenger wheel and you know one of the girls in the series is going to take a seat just as he gets to her at 90 miles an hour and it's like clearly composited in CG and he's wearing cables. Like there's a point where Sylvester Stallone just like jumps out of like a skidding pickup truck and does like a nice little tuck roll and like that's just Sly doing a fucking pretty sweet stunt. Mm-hmm. It's kind of dumb and it doesn't really fit in the movie and is not necessarily cool, but it's real and he's doing it. And I kind of like that.
That's true. And this is an era also when car stunts were, you know, not the 360 spins that you see in Fast and Furious or jumping from building to building. They were just kind of real dudes in real cars driving fast in dangerous ways. I think the car chase scene is probably the best scene of this entire movie.
It's pretty good. And it contains like I call this the Rockford file, which is anytime you've got a car that's backing up and then you slam it in drive and you whip over the wheel so you can see, so you can seamlessly go from high speed reverse to forward. Yeah. I've never seen a double Rockford with machine pistol finish. It's pretty impressive. Like Sly's just like, you know, he's going forward. He backs it up, throws it in reverse. Now he's going full throttle and backwards. He like blows his windshield out and takes out all these guys with his submachine gun. And then he reverse Rockfords and he's going back. And again, no CG, no like stuff on cables. It's just stunt dudes driving cars and looking really badass while they're doing it.
Yeah, going over hills and ramps and flying out of like second story parking garages. And it's kind of cool.
Yeah, what the fuck kind of putt-putt course are they driving on? Because this street has this succession of gentle hills. And it's got to be someplace in San Fran, right? It's where you always go when you want to do crazy jumps in an urban environment. But they're just launching. Every one of them is just launching these cars. And it's, I don't know, it looks incredible.
Mm-hmm.
It's pretty wild. There's at some point, there's also just kind of unreal geography. Like they get shot out of this hotel in the middle of no place. Sly is, and this is a pretty cool stunt too. He's like standing in the back of a pickup truck, like with his, you know, like twin pistols, and he's blasting the guys coming at him. He's shooting dudes off motorcycles, and that's pretty cool. Plus, like, I'm sure he was wearing some kind of cable attached to his belt, but like he just looks like he's standing there and the stuntman's weaving up it, you know, like that's medium risky and again, very real. But then they like, I don't know, they wreck the thing and Sly jumps off and tucks and he grabs Bridget and they hustle through. The next set piece is now through a citrus farm,
which is kind of cool. I don't think I've ever seen a shootout in a citrus grove.
I have never seen a and so they fight their way through the citrus grove and suddenly they end up in what I can only assume is an orange juice factory, because I don't understand, but it's a heavy industry orange juice factory, like big pits of molten metal. It's the Terminator 2 climax, but it's right next door. I cannot stress how he runs from a line of citrus from orange trees right into the sliding giant factory door where literally hell is happening.
No, there's so much fire in this place. It's ridiculous. They have a hallway of fire, which I assume is for some annealing or some crazy shit that you would do with
shit. I don't know.
Orange juice.
That's how they get the pulp out.
Right. They have a trench. I mean, it's just a trench dug into the floor that they're dumping molten metal into. For what
that's
purpose?
That's actually orange juice. That's how they're pasteurizing the orange juice so it stays better longer.
It's just a dirt floor with a trench that they're pouring this super hot liquid into. I don't know, man. None of this made any sense.
And we talked about like how sometimes like in The Quiet Place, we talked about part two, how sometimes it's a pleasure to be like, I see that moving part and I see this moving part and I see that. Oh, I wonder how this is going to fit. Like as soon as they stepped in, there's like these giant fucking meat hooks coming across, you know, the field of view. Simultaneously, there's these huge puddles of liquid metal and portals to hell. And I'm like, is the main baddie going to get meat hooked? Or is he going to get punched through one of the portals of hell? And I was delighted when both happened simultaneously.
The meat hook grabs him and takes him to hell.
Yeah, it does. And it's also like kind of like from a screenplay, from a parody screenplay, it's pretty delicious that this guy's going on and on about how he's going to, you know, like he's going to go to hell and he's going to drag Cobra. And like he's literally like this bot corpse on a hook is drugged through what does look like a flaming portal, sending him straight to hell.
Yeah.
So yeah, he definitely got that all those one-liners connected into the action, and I like that.
The other like extremely obvious thing that I saw coming immediately. I mean, as soon as Cobra steps out of his car in the very first scene that he's in, I'm like, oh, okay, that match is going to be used later in the movie to light someone on fire. I expected it to be someone of more consequence, I guess, but he just lights the sniper on fire, the one who's chasing him through the orange grove. Not as big a deal as I expected. Like, light the crazy psycho cop lady up, or light up Brian, whatever his name is, Night Stalker.
Mm.
Light the Night Slasher. Light them up, you know? I was a little disappointed with who he lit up. Also, I'm a little surprised that in a house, in a factory full of fire, flames everywhere, the heat has to be off the charts in this place. They've just got an open barrel of super flammable liquid just sitting in up on a second story that he can dump onto this guy.
Yeah. That's got to be.
OSHA probably has a thing to say about that.
I want to talk about the. You're right, because it was anticlimactic. It was clearly something I was looking forward to from the very first frame that Sly had a match dangling out of his mouth.
Yeah.
And especially since the lady psycho cop, the second in command of the axe murders, was kind of unceremoniously dispatched. It was essentially friendly fire.
Yeah.
They could have. But I feel like in this stage in the 80s, you can't just set a woman on fire screaming, even if you establish her as being the number two of a sadistic, satanic axe murderer cult. Like, they're just like, oh, that doesn't play right in Peoria. If you just set this looks like a school mom right. on fire. Nowadays, you know, Quentin Tarantino's like, you know, after you can absolutely brutalize an evil woman on film. But back then, I think that's but it did feel unsatisfactory. It did feel like they used one of the best deaths on just a literally who dude.
Mm hmm.
I think this might be one of the first times in cinema that you've ever seen like a laser scope, like a, you know, like a, what do they call those?
Oh, yeah.
A red dot, you know, where it actually puts a red dot on something that you shoot. These submachine guns were like this really odd brand of gun. I think only like 400 were ever made. And then they kind of came reissued in the 90s. They tried to make a comeback, but they were never very successful. And they're used a very odd design, but they're extremely iconic. Like, that's the thing I remember about this movie, his mirrored sunglasses and his like really cool machine pistol looking thing with the laser sight on it.
Sylvester Stallone reached out to the manufacturer of that gun and said, hey, I want you to reissue the gun. And I want to be credited as manufacturer of this weapon for this movie. And they said yes.
I wonder when submachine guns started becoming dominant in action movies, because usually it was like real like assault rifles or machine guns or things like that. And you didn't start seeing the machine pistols and stuff until maybe Die Hard. Is Die Hard where you started seeing like the MP5s and
that's a good question. I don't really know.
Because like I remember we were watching, it might have been the first Lethal Weapon when they were showing a SWAT team and it was just essentially, you know, cops in slightly different uniforms, but they're just using like M16s and stuff. Yeah. You know, I wonder when everything got like really super tactical. Maybe this is like one of the first ones where I guess Red Heat and Arnold Schwarzenegger the year before used this exact same gun, which makes me think that Sly is like, oh, whatever Arnold had, nigga, I got to have it. But like, I wonder if the films like that started bringing it back to like, oh, smaller, sleeker, sexier, more tactical, futuristic looking guns. I have a proposition for you.
Okay.
Cobra is a Christmas film.
Oh, Jesus.
It apparently takes place entirely the week before Christmas. There's tons of Christmas lights, Christmas performances, or Christmas. There's no Christmas songs. That would seal the deal if we had this just even one Jingle Bell Rock or something. But like, a good 15-20% of its running time involves Christmas imagery, I think.
Does it? I didn't notice any of it.
Really? The whole fucking shootout in the beginning, like there's Christmas, like this the guy that gets shotgun like collapses into two different Christmas trees. No, wow.
No, I didn't notice any of it.
You're in Midsummer Grinch mode, man. Your Christmas radar is burnt out. You're not looking for it.
Sure is. Wild. All right, some things I did notice though, unlike this nurse. So, all right, there's a scene where Ingrid is in the hospital, right? And the night slasher, whatever, is coming after her in the hospital. He's dressed as a janitor. He's got this mop bucket and he's roaming the halls looking for her. And the nurse notices, hey, that guy, he's here awfully late to be mopping. That's a little strange. What she doesn't notice is that literally this entire facility is carpeted. Bottom to top, like the whole fucking thing is carpet. And the thing that she notices is that the mop guy is there too late. He's not on his normal schedule mopping the floors. That's weird. Are you fucking kidding me? I don't know if they shot this in an office building or what. This is like that kind of mistake that can only come about from like last minute production shit. And somebody who scouted the location, but didn't read the script closely enough and didn't think about, this guy's got a mop. Maybe we should have a place that doesn't have carpet.
Also, hospitals famously don't have carpet. There's all types of vomiting good reasons. And fecal matter and blood spurting. And you want to be able to clean that shit in a way you can't do. It's like what kind of maniac has a fully carpeted bathroom?
It's terrible.
I know people did. And there's in all the back 70s, in the 80s. Maybe there was like a rash of carpeting in hospitals in the 70s, 80s. Before people were like, wait a second.
Then
this
why
is
the mop bucket? That's what I want to know. Why does the mop guy seem normal except for his routine is off?
Yeah, that's hard to explain.
really hard to explain.
This movie also has one of my favorite tropes, which is the good guys playing cat and mouse in this like very complicated industrial factory type setting. And he gets the drop on a guy and he just turns a random valve.
Mm-hmm.
And it vents fire on the guy like 15 feet away.
Yeah, turned up the gas. Turned up the
heat.
Why
does that always work? How does he like... In a factory like that, there's a million valves. Just once, I want to see someone turn a valve and it sprays them with scalding steam and kills them.
Right. That's how you do the parody. Yeah.
Or it sprays something like 200 feet away that has no relation to this thing. It's mm-hmm. just, it's always like not only it's pinpoint precision in the way you can. Yeah. I just thought that's so funny. It turns a little valve, gout of flame. It's done.
The other extraordinarily confusing scene to me, not just the carpeting and the mopping. There's a scene where he comes home and there's like a group of dudes parked in a way where he can't get into his normal parking spot. And so he just like rolls his car up and pushes them out of the way with it. And, you know, they get up and they start to get in his face and he's just so, oh, I'm your worst nightmare or whatever. And then he rips the guy's shirt off. Yeah. Like as a fuck you and walks away. And when you see the guy's chest, he's wearing a microphone, it like taped, like you would think a wire, right? So he's wearing this microphone. I don't know if that is part of the filming, like the movie, and they needed to get this guy's audio, so they taped a mic to his chest, or if he is like an undercover cop, but they never Or like an informant who's like going in with a wire to catch somebody. They never explain it. It's just like, the weirdest thing.
That must
thing.
Be one of the things. Cause I noticed that the next time you see like this guy's like moving his car and being like extremely ass kissy to Cobretti, like, hey, how you doing there, Colonel? Like, yeah. And I'm like, that must be something in the 30 minutes that they cut because.
Yeah.
So I want to talk about that. They didn't cut this so much to get rid of their X rating, although that was part of it. But like, I guess this movie was up against Top Gun and Stallone's like, oh, my God, this movie's so much better than our movie. I made a turd. Oh, I'm going to lose my shirt. What are going to do? Apparently, the time tested solution back then to make a movie more competitive is cut it to where it's under 90 minutes. Screen it 17 times a day and try to get as much of your money up front before everyone finds out it's a turd. Yeah. That was like. And they showed several examples of that. Like when I was reading the background of this movie, it's like, oh, much like they did with this movie. So apparently that was Hollywood's thing. It's like, well, if the movie sucks, we're just going to cut. We're going to make it even worse. We're going to shove it out there. And hopefully suckers will see it on opening weekend. And by the time they read Ebert saying stay away, then we're already have most of our money back. But there's tons of small continuity errors like that, where there's like characters that clearly are supposed to be more important than they are, and they just go nowhere. And I kind of want to get my hands. Hospital scene.
Also, I forgot the other thing about it is as soon as like the jig is up and she pulls the fire alarm, people just swarm from everywhere. Right. It's played like this slasher flick where like he's stalking her silently through these darkened halls, completely devoid of any human life. They're the only two people in the entire building. And then she pulls that alarm and hundreds of people swarm out like in full suits. It's not like these fuckers were, you know, sleeping patients or something in hospital gowns. No, there were executive level people from this hospital just in a patient's room. There were numerous doctors and nurses everywhere.
These hallways look like Times Square all of a sudden. Yeah.
It's insane, man. It's absolutely insane. That whole scene is bonkers.
Do you want also something bonkers? Right at the beginning of the movie where they switch from the intro to the actual movie itself, there's this Angel of the City montage where they introduce Bridget Nelson's Ingrid.
God.
But for the first minute of that intro, they just keep showing random flashes of these robots that are clearly built out of like tea kettles and irons and like some shit. Like this is an art project. And they keep on showing flashes of that and flashes of Cobretti shaking guys down. And then like it's like, oh, this is part of a fashion shoot. But I actually thought I was having a stroke or something for the first 30 seconds of that montage. Like, what the fuck is going on with this?
It was so bizarre. And they also show like in that montage, they show like the brass knuckles with the knife and the spikes on them, and they're just the dude's fist holding it up. It's like, yeah,
it
the
is a juxtaposition pretty, it is of a, those. It is a pretty iconic knife. I know that there was like a big fascination with those style knives around this time. Like, oh my God, look at this. Like, you know, it. I mean, hell, I wouldn't want to fight a guy with a knife like this.
Oh, for sure.
Also, if these knives are so badass, like, why don't like every military in the world use them? There must be a problem with the full brass knuckle spikes deer gutting knife combo that like you either hurt yourself more often than you hurt your enemy or something, because
probably.
Yeah, it's got to be something to it. Last thing I got revolving around Bridget Nelson is there's a scene where she gets up and he's like, can't you sleep? And she's like, no, I'm having trouble. And like literally he's just sitting 5 feet away from her, watching her as he repeatedly breaks down, cleans and racks the slides on his guns.
Right.
It's like, imagine trying to sleep to some psychopath who's just got, plus like the gun, that shit stinks. It's the whole room smells like a ammo factory. Just constantly. It sounds like Optimus Prime is transforming right next to your bed. Clack, click, clack, clack, click, check, clack. Like, stop cleaning your guns. I think she slept with him just so he'd stop cleaning his guns and she could get a good night's sleep afterwards.
Yeah.
Poor Ingrid.
Yeah, it's unfortunate. And of course, the final scene is maybe the dumbest scene of any of the scenes in the entire movie, when the guy is saying, oh, come to hell with me, Cobra. You know, I'm insane and I'll plead insanity and the judges will let me out. That's how crime works. And that's how justice works and the law works. And the entire time, Cobra's standing there with a gun pointed at him. Cobra has just murdered 50 of his friends with extreme prejudice. There were no speeches given to his other 50 friends. There were no moments for them to get their last words in. There was no mercy shown. And this guy is somehow thinking that Cobra has turned over a new leaf during this whole sequence where he's been stalked and they've attempted to murder him.
Yeah, it's so meta aware. Like, he knows that the trope is that the hero will mow down through tons of mooks, but he gets to the arch mook and is like, no, I'm better than this. I'm going to throw away my lightsaber or my sword or my bow or whatever, because I want you to do the time. But, you know, again, he gets meat hooked and sent to hell.
Yeah, this is the stupidest scene.
He miscalculated. He had watched a lot of other bad movies and didn't realize that this was a good bad movie that's going to have the guy just not give a fuck and torch him up anyway.
Yeah. And then they do Cobra. A lot of like standard cop trope things at the end where like he goes and asks for a replacement car because holy shit, they fuck his car up. Like we talked a little bit about it, but it's devastated by the end. It's not going anywhere. And he asks for a new car. Awesome. They're like, it's not on the budget. Which, you know,
right after the guy says, hey, Cobretti, if you ever want like an easier assignment or anything you need to do, any resources you need, you know, you could fix my car. No, fuck that. We don't got the budget for Mercury 50 restorations. Get out of here. Oh, okay. Yeah, I guess I'll go back to cut my pizza in half. That's how it. That's why he cuts his pizza in half. It's a budget thing.
I mean, it's gotta be, right?
He carefully cuts each slice in half, and he eats one day, one the other, because you know his meager salary on the zombie squad doesn't pay the bills.
And there are a couple of like good jokes. I think I like the Alice joke. I like the joke about his name where he says, you know, I wanted something more macho, like Alice. That was pretty funny. It was all right.
It's a little Johnny Cash boy named Sue, but it's decent.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
I will say that, like, I think that Stallone is a pretty charming, charismatic guy. Yes. In like, but he only has the one gear. It's kind of like, I'm kind of fucking dumb, and you can't even believe how dumb I am. But also, I'm kind of like self aware about it, right? You know, like, I'm Rocky. I'm Rocky. I'm a meat packer, but you know, there's something going on behind these eyes, right? You know, and he just like that's his whole shtick. Which brings me to. Unless you have other points, I want to talk about Stallone himself.
Okay. Well, let me talk about the funniest joke. The thing that got the biggest laugh from me in this entire movie was not really a joke, but when they're in the parking garage and, you know, the Night Slasher is coming after Ingrid and the cop comes and like out of the elevator and is like shooting at him to save her.
Mm-hmm.
And then they crash this van into him. The crash is so violent. The way they just completely obliterate this cop, like, I don't know if it pushes him into the elevator shaft or what, but he's gone. He doesn't exist anymore, man.
He just gets erased.
He's not just dead. There's no body. They'll never even know he worked there. It's fucked up how hard they hit that guy.
Since the dawn of time, we've been putting clothes on our back that identify us with our people, our group, our tribe.
And while Bald Move might be one of the smallest, weirdest tribes out there, transcending all concepts of border, class, culture, and creed, we still have respect for the old ways.
At support.baldmove.com, you can get t-shirts, hats, mugs, and more. We have something for every one of our podcasts, or just wear the four pips of the Bald Move logo with pride.
Bald Move merch beats running around naked, and they make a great gift for the Bald Move fan in your life. Join our tribe! Head over to support.baldmove.com and click on merch to start shopping. You've been listening to quite a few Bald Move podcasts now, but you're not in the club? Whoo boy, you are missing out.
Not only are all of our premium club podcast feeds completely ad-free, but we have lots of other great content exclusively for people in the club.
There's a weekly lunch with Jim and Aaron where we chat with fans about anything and everything from TV and films, food, fun, life advice, and more.
But there's also Off the Clock, our premium podcast where we talk about all the shows we don't have time for on our public feeds.
Plus, you get access to our full spoiler-filled first-run movie reviews of our newly released films.
Don't forget Instant Take and Talk podcast, where we give our hot takes and discuss television shows with our fans live and immediately after the episode airs.
With mega shows like House of the Dragon coming this summer, we're going to have lots to talk about.
Not to mention access to our fun and friendly community of club members, with exclusive Discord channels and a dedicated forum. It's one of the best places on the internet to hang out and chat about pop culture.
Bottom line, you're helping two regular type guys in the Midwest make the content you like to listen to, which some would say is rewarding to itself.
Help keep the lights on and the bits flowing at Bald Move.
And get some awesome content for yourself. Head to support.baldmove.com to join the club today.
We try to make it super easy to support making podcasts at Bald Move. Just join the club.
Well, some people aren't the joining type, or maybe they're already in the club but want to add a little bit of gratuity for an especially great season of coverage, or for a podcast that really spoke to them, or gave them that bit of support in a tough time.
For these, and for whatever other reason you might have, our tip jar is always open. Head over to support.baldmove.com and click the donate option to say, hey, keep doing what you're doing. We appreciate it.
Once again, check out support.baldmove.com for all the great ways to help me and Jim keep making the podcast you love.
One thing I want to talk about before we get out of here is Stallone's place on the badass list, because he has long been essentially 3B to Arnold's 3A.
Sure.
Is that a fair assessment? Or is it possible that is Stallone better? Because I think Stallone on the whole has had maybe slightly a better career. If you talk about in terms of his things on Copland, like when you think of things that you can take him seriously in, the majority of the Rocky films, the first Rambo,
sure.
He's got these great movies that actually have something to them, that are not just ludicrous action fest, not just one liner quips. And he does that too. But I almost feel like that you could make an argument that he's better than Arnold, or that he actually is much worse. Because every time I see one of these films, even when he's in ripped and shredded mode, he's not Arnold.
Right.
Arnold just shows up effortlessly looking like a fucking mountain. You can tell that Stallone puts a lot of fucking work in, and he's wearing lift shoes and all this other stuff. He's a small guy with a small frame, has put as much beef on it as he can.
Yeah, yeah.
But I feel like giving him a full C for the champion.
His shoulders are meat hooks, and he's hanging as big a slab as he can off those meat hooks, but they're not big hooks.
They're not big meat hooks. They're little small fishing hook meat hooks. And I feel like that he needs to either get a bonus on his roles, because he actually has some Arnold has had a few roles where he kind of takes it serious. I haven't seen the one that everyone talks about. Maggie, isn't that the one?
I think so. Yeah.
Zombie Apocalypse. Everyone talks about how well he acts in that. But I don't know. It's always kind of stuck in my craw that Sly is just a notch below Arnold. I don't know that that's true. And I wonder if there's going to be some newcomers that take. That maybe fill into that gap slot.
Oh, maybe. I mean, we'll have to talk about it this week on the live stream. Figure that out. But I think Arnold is exactly what he needs to be in every role he's in, and that doesn't usually imply a lot of great acting. He doesn't take a lot of serious dramatic roles that require a lot of him, other than just to sort of be the dead-eyed. Killer robot, right? Like Terminator. That's a dramatic role, but it's also not one that requires a lot of acting chops.
Right.
And then in stuff Jingle All the Way and Last Action Hero and stuff, he's got in Total Recall, he's got to have this serious but also comedic timing. Whereas in Rocky, you need to believe this guy's struggle, right? You need to believe that this is a character who has hopes and dreams. And fears. I never feel that about an Arnold Schwarzenegger character.
That's true. I'm trying to think of which is successfully, who has the more charisma too, because Sly is very charismatic, but he is very the same. Whereas, Arnold, when he's a barely articulate barbarian, when he is a killing machine, when he is, and he's got other roles what's the one when he did with Cameron, True Lies, where he's actually pretty suave. Mm-hmm. He's almost, he's got that gear to him too. I feel like it's a little bit more versatile, but there is something just kind of raw and an acting kind of ability that Stallone has that Schwarzenegger lacks.
Yeah.
I don't think Arnold, I think that Stallone could do most of Arnold's roles. Mm-hmm. I don't know what Arnold looks like in First Blood. Or what Arnold looks like in the first Rocky, the first two Rockies.
That's a tough one. I don't know that I see Arnold pulling off Rocky. I could see him pulling off the first quote unquote Rambo movie, First Blood.
Really?
I think so, because it doesn't, if you look at Stallone's performance in that, it's pretty dead mackerelized, right? Just a guy who's seen too much shit in war comes back and gets hassled. I think he can pull that off, and we've seen Predator, right? He can definitely pull off the rest of that movie.
I think Arnold would struggle with the scene where when Rambo goes to approach the mother of his dead comrade, and they have this kind of I think that that's the stuff that he would struggle with. Whereas the other thing is I've watched some of Stallone Prime, he's really good at just meat and potato type stunts. where like Arnold is very good at like doing set piece stuff, like, hey, rip this phone booth out of the ground, carry this fucking tree on your shoulder, mm-hmm. punch this horse,
lift this truck.
But like, yeah. if you ever see Arnold like try to be stealthy, it's a fucking grim parody of a guy trying to be sneaky. Or yeah. if you see like Arnold doing like a combat role or something, it always looks very clumsy. And where like I don't know, like I feel like Stallone moves a little bit better too. I really think the reason they're 1A and 1B is because that's kind of how popular culture presented them. For like sure. they were always dueling at the box office with these big over the top action movies. That's what they're primarily known for. But like the more I see of Stallone's catalog, the less it seems similar to Arnold's, except for when you're mm-hmm. talking about the most gonzo stuff, like because Cobra. Yeah, yeah. This obviously is in Arnold's gear. The two Rambo sequels obviously are in Arnold's gear. But Stallone does a lot more than just that, I think.
I haven't seen Maggie and I need to because it might recalibrate my Arnold senses here. But I don't think he could do what Stallone does in Rocky Balboa, based on what I've seen. Rocky Balboa.
Also, it's unfair to compare something that somebody does at 59 when they've had like 40 years of experience in industry, like taking acting lessons and stuff. Like it's not compare. It's kind of unfair to compare like Arnold doing Maggie to like Stallone doing Rocky because mm-hmm. like, you know, there's just a huge disparity in experience, which kind of mm-hmm. makes me think that Stallone just has got more talent. He's just got more acting talent, but he's got less beef talent.
Sure. He can't stack it as high.
He's got less physical talent.
Sure.
I don't know. It's something I want to be thinking about during our badass deliberations, which, by the way, our first one is going to be this week, Wednesday, on Working Wednesday. We're going to open it up with a open forum discussion of our existing badass list. We're going to blow off the dust on the spreadsheet. We're going to go through, you know, we've watched a lot of films in the last 10 years. We've filled in some holes in the catalog. We're going to try to go through and debate some of these things, like, is Arnold better than Sly? If you want to join us, please tune in on Wednesday at 1 PM Eastern on twitch.tv/baldmove. And, we're going to be doing it. So yeah, hopefully you can join us. And, next week will be, the badass marathon will roll on as we consider Jean-Claude Van Damme in Bloodsport.
Hell yeah.
His probably best role?
Oh yeah. It's Bloodsport or Kickboxer, one of the two.
Which is kind of they're a lot of the same kind of stuff. I'm excited. I haven't seen this movie in 20 years. So I'm really excited to see what kind of what the muscles from Brussels can do right at the start of his career. Hopefully you'll join us for the next phase of that and for our badass debates, which again, if you missed a live podcast, we're going to turn those into standalone podcasts later on. But if you want to participate in the debate and join us live, twitch.tv/baldmove, 1 PM Wednesdays Eastern. All right, we'll see you next week. Until then, I'm Aaron
and I'm Jim.
See ya.